You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 64. That's what Legacy will look like in 2024 of
In Response,
a Legacy podcast.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Philip. And we're talking about Legacy.
Okay, a little bit of a weird intro, but okay.
Yeah, sometimes it happens like that because maybe you can hear it. We lost Peter along the way.
Yeah.
I think he's sick at home with a flu, I imagine. But yeah, nevertheless, we're talking about our favorite beloved format, exactly. Legacy, and what it will look like in 2024. But first, let me thank our Patreons. I didn't have the word right now. Christian Noitz, Matt Duncan, and Moritz Eichmeier. Thank you very much for supporting the show. And if you want to support the cast, you can do this at patreon.com/response_legacy. And with that, I have one question to ask for you, Daniel.
Yes, I'm happy to answer.
Oh my god. How was the team event, the team trials that you played?
The team trios? This was...
I think Peter and you played, but in different teams.
Yeah.
I wanted to play myself with Peter, but there was a little accident on the way, so I didn't get there in time.
Yeah.
But at least you could play.
Yeah, that is true. We had a little bit of a Christmas event at our local game store, and we played a Team Trios, which consisted of Pioneer, Modern, and Legacy as the three main formats.
Only one Eternal format in there.
Yeah, such shame. Modern is half. Modern is also an Eternal, but yeah. It was nice, actually. I played Modern for a long time. I never touched any cards that, or any deck that, yeah, was for Modern in a long period of time. But in the end, I took a spin with this Rakdos Scam deck that was pretty popular.
I wanted to ask here, because the last time you played Team Trials, you had played in Team Burn, where it was like Legacy, Modern, and Pauper, the Team Trials. I think it's about, it was pre-COVID days, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
And then you played Legacy Burn, Modern Burn, and Pauper Burn, and you went first. So it was a surprise for everyone that this went so well.
And exactly. Yeah. We just thought what to play, and in the end, we wanted to make like a nice theme behind it. And we said Triple Burn has to be the way to go, because Pauper Burn was also a deck that was possible to play. And in the end, we won this event. So this was pretty nice. And here and this year, we had to defend our title, kind of, and we decided, what to play in this time of the round. We could do Burn 2.0, kind of, but Pioneer doesn't have any Burn deck, I think. Not really.
Yeah, I think all the good free damage spells aren't in Pioneer.
Yeah. And therefore, we thought, okay, let's focus on actually good decks.
No hate here for the Burn players. It's still a cool deck.
Yeah. And then we settled on one player was playing Legacy Painter. Then I was on Scam, Rakdos Scam. And then on Pioneer, I think it was Black, Red, also Rakdos, basically, Copter. Because in Pioneer, previously to the event, in Pioneer, Smuggler's Copter was unbanned, so the meta was kind of new. because
oh, wow.
people didn't really know is Copter actually good in the format or not. So a lot of people were trying it out, and in the end there has been a Arrakis deck that did pretty well in the beginning. So this was one deck to pick up. In Modern, it was the other way around. Actually, Fury was banned just before the event. And it was just not sure if the deck is actually any good anymore, because Fury was just so powerful for this Modern deck. And but I decided, you know, I was always the chunt guy. I was always the mid-range guy. I knew what to do in this kind of format with these kind of strategies. So I just picked it up because it was kind of natural for me. And yeah, we had one Legacy Painter player who also just played Painter. And for us three, we in the end had all three of our decks had Fable of the Mirror Breaker registered to the tournament. So we just had our team name, The Fabulous Team.
The Fabulous Three.
Yeah.
great name. I just have a little Peter impression here.
Yeah.
I have to ask about the Painter list. Did the Painter list play mono red, or was there a splash like white or black? And did they play Chaos Defiler?
It was basically the same list that Peter played in Eternal Weekend, yes. So it was red with a white splash, and also Chaos Defiler as a shooter target, basically. So, but besides that, no black cards. So it was Boros Painter with
so all, he was main basically the outlier, because you were Rakdos and Pioneer. Yeah. Stefan was Rakdos.
True.
And Legacy, the Constantine, yeah. Was his name, right?
No, it was Sebastian. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sebastian was playing Boros. So,
yeah.
But at least you were, again, Team Red.
Yeah.
Like the last time.
Team Red, for sure. So this color, the main color, stick the same.
Maybe you should burn your brainstorms in your pondos. I don't think you need them in
no
the
blue,
future.
No blue, because the funny thing is we won the event again. So... We defended our title and we made it first. I think it was 9 or 10 players or 9 or 10
teams
in, mm-hmm. in total, yeah. But it was pretty close, I gotta say. We played against the team of your, or where Peter was also playing. We won against them, but it was still pretty close in terms of tiebreakers, whether we or they would be in the end making the first place. We got there in the end, so this is really great. And we won a box of, what was it actually called? I think it was Dominaria or something like this. So pretty nice.
Okay, Dominaria Remastered? Or?
Yeah, Remastered, yeah. Dominaria Remastered. I think it was that we got as a prize, one display. Pretty cool event of our local game store. It has been the second time now mm-hmm. for this team trios, happening just before Christmas. We got free drinks, free cookies also, and a little bit of sweets. And yeah, this was a nice little fun event just before Christmas to settle things down a little bit and, yeah, prepare for the holidays, kind of.
Yeah, so huge shout out to our LGS owner, to Stefan Steiner, for making all this possible.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Speaking of events, actually, I think we're now in the beginning of 2024 and there are a huge load of events coming up.
Yeah.
This year. I mean, this year is really, really something for a legacy player to buckle up and really grind all the way to the ELM, I think.
ELM is big. Last year, the first... Let's say, well, it was the second iteration last year, and now it really takes up steam and players get to know the event, and more events and slots are actually recognized by all of peoples in whole Europe. And actually this weekend we had the first event of this year already.
Okay.
That was an ELM qualifier. It was the Italian event hosted by Bosi MTG, the Damnation event.
The Damnation MTG Fest, I think it was in Pisa in Italy?
Yeah, exactly. It was this weekend. It was, I think, on Saturday they had a Modern tournament, and then on Sunday they had a Legacy ELM qualifier. All live streamed also, so pretty nice. I think it's also always great to see coverage of Legacy, paper Legacy content, which is rarely seen, but I think we all appreciate the work of a lot of people that are doing this.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we already have the link here because they uploaded the video, I think,
yeah,
2 hours ago or something to their YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And we will put the link in the show notes. So be sure to catch up and
watch the action.
What?
Yeah, what do we think about the top eight? You know, the top eight, I think, really represents what Legacy looks like at the moment, at least.
I'm kind of curious. The meta shifted a lot in the last few months. So when we were looking back Initiative Madness.
It was last year, I think.
It was this year, in the first ELM. And then we bannings. Yeah, we did a 20 years of Legacy episode last, and now I can't remember anything about last year.
Early last year, the bannings were happening. So White Plume and Expressive got banned in April or March or something.
Yeah, and then in September, then we had Scam and Besiege.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, ramping up the format, and now everything is settling back again. And then we had Eternal Weekend with Beanstalk all over the place.
Beanstalk is one of the biggest impacting cards from the last set. For sure.
Yeah, for sure. I think it looks like the meta has settled a little bit.
Yeah, and it's really nice. For example, here, when we have a look at this Damnation event top 8, we had Grixis Elba, of course, which is the winner of the top 8. Well, Matteo Blasi.
So, congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we had 2x Infect.
This is now probably the biggest surprise here for everyone. Well, maybe not so much because everyone knows about Legolas Quick Reflexes.
Yeah.
This card is just bonkers.
Yeah.
Especially in the two decks that I personally think it's best situated in. It's in Naya Depths and in Infect.
Mm-hmm.
These decks really can uphold the power of Legolas Quick Reflexes.
It's so powerful, yeah.
And we can see it here. We have 2 Infect in the top 8. I mean, this is something that we haven't seen in the last, I don't know, 5 years?
Yeah, pretty much. So I guess this is really down to this card. So
Sam Dams is...
He really likes to see his top 8. It's the most represented deck in the top 8. It's the only 2 of. Then we have Sneak and Show is also a contestant in the top 8. Reanimator, Red-White Initiative, Mono Black Storm. Also a little bit...
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
Unusual, actually. But I guess this is Mono Black in the sense of... with Ursa Saga, I guess, and Besiege.
Yeah, so it's kind of probably Saga Storm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Because this is, I think at the moment, the strong... No offense here to Brian Cook, but I think this is momentarily the best Storm deck out there because the Plan B is just so insane with huge...
It is good.
Constructs, yeah.
It is good, yeah. It is... There's a lot of different variants in terms, if we would call it... Well, there's this... Saga Storm can be considered an own kind of deck, but there's of course this Ant, then we have TES, and then Saga Storm. For Ant, there's a lot of different directions that you can go at the moment, but for Saga, it is pretty clear you are Mono Black. Sometimes splashing green for Wheel of Summer also works. And
for Gaea's Will.
Gaea's Will is kind of a 2-2 target for Besiege mostly, but in extreme cases, you could also suspend it.
Yeah.
So Mono Black Storms, definitely, I can see it. It makes sense to be in the top 8 here because it is a very strong deck. And this kind of deck can juke a lot of grindy decks that you usually can't deal with. For example, this deck just doesn't care about up the Beanstalk, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't care. I just win, you know. This is the strategy of this kind of
game. Yeah, and what I also really... I don't know about the exact list, but in my experience, a lot of these decks play a four of a position agent, which do a lot of work against all the fair decks. So first turn opposition agent just simply locks a lot of them out of the game.
Can be that they played a couple of them in the sideboard, yeah.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of them play four in the sideboard, yeah.
Then the last one is a Rakdel deck that is, I guess, similar to the one that was won by Jujubin on the Eternal Weekend. Mm-hmm. So just blue, red as a main color and then having this small green splash for questing to it. And I think carpet or something in the sideboard.
I think two carpets in the sideboard, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, also pretty strong deck. I think what this is kind of showing is that since we have two kind of different directions of Delver, it usually indicates...
Deformat is healthy.
Deformat is healthy, exactly.
I mean, I don't want to be the person who is like, I told you, but...
Yeah.
I told you back then, if Delver is forced to go in more directions or there are more flavors of Delver, then this format suddenly is healthy. And that's what it looks right now. It's so great to see two kind of Delver lists in the top eight.
I think it's also really nice.
Yeah, I loved all the time when there was Buck Delver, Crixus Delver, Rack Delver. It's just always... I don't get all the hate that people have. I have to play against Delver. It's actually one of my most favorite decks to play against.
Yeah, Delver is... I also think that Delver, even though you lose a lot, because Delver is...
It's such a strong deck. It's a
strong deck, but it doesn't feel miserable, completely... I much rather lose to Delver than against any Chalice Stompy deck, to be honest. And
that's true.
It just doesn't feel like a game of Magic. And for Delver, I really like this intricate lines of daze your key spell and a key moment or waste the correct land and all these kind of things. Oftentimes ending up with only a Delver on the battlefield and nothing else. And I don't know, this is like Magic on really the core level kind of.
Yeah.
Cheap spells, you know, slinging spells altogether, and then tempo gameplays and whatnot. This is, I think it's very enjoyable.
Yeah, especially even if you're against Delver.
Yeah,
I mean, people are saying, yeah, if I would play Delver, then I would have fun because I'm winning a lot. But winning is not the only thing that actually brings fun to the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, if you have a drawn out game and even if you lose, but you learn something from that, that is, I think, first of all, a valuable lesson, then also can be fun. Because I mean, this is difficult, of course, and sometimes it's hard to take a loss against any deck.
Sure, yeah.
I think you got some gameplay out of it, at least.
At least, yeah. Yep. What I really like about these two Delver lists also is that they are, let me phrase it that way, they're the same deck, but on different sides of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Rack Delver with Questing Druid tries to gain card advantage through Questing Druid, while Grixis Delver tries to deny you card advantage with Bowmaster.
That's true, yeah.
So that's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. What do you think? This is what I'm been wondering. Like when we compare it to the past, when we had, I think it was... blue, red, or Grixis Delver. Just the existence of this deck was giving Buck Delver a good showing because it had a good matchup against Grixis Delver because it was just the bigger, the stronger Delver deck. Do you think we have the same situation here that maybe Ruck is better in the mirror against Grixis, or is this I'm not sure because. It is not that they kind of cancel each other.
No, not really. It's not that anymore because it used to be that way.
Yeah.
with Canadian Fresh and Grixis Delver and Buck Delver, you had a clear ladder. Like or Canadian Fresh was pure tempo, and then you get a little bit bigger. Then you were Grixis. Then you go a little bit bigger. Then you're Buck.
Yeah.
And now really, this Grixis Delver and this Teemer Delver or this Rock Delver are really the same, just different.
Yeah.
But they operate in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think there is room in the format for something like a Bug Delver,
mm-hmm.
or I don't know, something different that seems a little bit bigger than both.
Yeah.
And maybe even for something that's a little bit more tempo-y or a little bit faster than both. So there's still room to explore. Maybe people just are just afraid to lose. Because brewing a deck is oftentimes, yeah, just losing a lot.
Yeah.
And I think like a Bug Delver list seems to be out there and has to be...
Could be, yeah. But a Bug Delver... Well, Bug is one favorite combination that I tried recently, but we can talk about this.
We will do for sure.
in a couple of moments also. There's directions you can go for this for sure. But overall, I think it's a pretty nice event and pretty nice top 8.
I gotta say, I really like the resurgence of Sneak and Joe.
Yeah, that's true. It has been
off the radar for at least 2 or 3 years. I mean, I played against it sometimes, but it was never really, a major concern. It was like, I've seen myself when I was building a sideboard, and it's like, yeah, this card used to be for Sneak and Show, and it's like, well, actually, I don't need this anymore. And I put something else in it, and then yep. I just got wrecked by Sneak and Show.
Yep.
Maybe that happened here.
Yeah.
Or Sneak and Show is on the rise again.
It made it to the finals. This is what I know because I got to watch the final game, just last couple of moments, and it was in the end down to just a Delver start kind of.
Okay. Yeah.
With DRC and then Delver and then a couple of Wastelands or something like this. And the Sneak and Show player were, it ended actually pretty nicely, what I remember. The only thing, well, the Sneak and Show player wanted to do show and tell into Grizzlebrand or Trax or something. And then in the end, the Delver player Matteo had, I think, a DRC and a Delver in play and was about to kill him, its opponent. And he had a force anyway in hand, so it was pretty safe. But even against that, he had set up a counterbalance.
Okay.
He played it in the last turn, and he had a force of negation on top of the library.
Ooh.
So he set everything up, even if the only thing they can cast is show and tell. Doesn't matter, counterbalance trigger, set up.
Wow, beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah. that's pretty amazing. And... Yeah, that's what Matteo got the win in the end. So yeah, but Sneak and Show pretty strong. I mean, it got to the finals in the end. So
maybe I should get some show and tells because I'm contemplating the last half a year or so.
It's pretty cheapish deck.
Yeah, to get the last remaining pieces for Sneak and Show, it would be like 3 Emrah. I don't know. Do they play 4 Emrah Cool?
I think 3, even less than that. They have a mix of Grizzlebrand, Emrah Cool, and
Atraxa.
And Atraxa, yeah. Those are the 3 creatures. I don't know the exact numbers.
Yeah, I think that's... I just need the Emrah Cool, the creature. No, I have the Grizzlebrands. Emrah Cools, Atraxas, and Show and Tells.
Yeah.
And that's maybe... Then I that's got the whole deck, and that would be pretty interesting because... I think Show and Tell or Sneak and Show is a great deck to actually get players involved into the format and to learn other players the game and the format.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a deck that's, I don't want to say cheap, but that is
it's okay.
It's feasible to build into, just to lend out to other people. Maybe Sneak and Show would be the right direction to go instead of Burn or Death and Taxes, because Burn gets stale pretty quickly and Death and Taxes is just so hard to play, actually.
True.
Even though it's
on the power level side, it has been also on the... This is, I think... I don't know if it's due to Bowmaster, but Death and Taxes has kind of punched its way through the last couple of years, sometimes with these Yorion versions, but now it's at the low end of power level at the moment compared to the other, what you can do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, maybe it's also because of, yeah.
Yorion. It's because that's one very hot take here, but I think it's because of Yorion. If you go back to 60 cards left in Texas, the deck would be much, much better.
Yeah, you have to beat, of course, up the Beanstalk Pirates also. You can beat maybe Delver, but it's tough. It's tough for left in Texas. But yeah, a first ELM slot kind of in the books.
Congrats to Matteo Blasi. Congrats. First ELM slot goes to Italy. Yeah. Who would have known?
Who would have known, yeah.
But there were a lot of international competitions, so it could have been basically everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had the... How do you say this? If you have the home advantage. They had the home advantage.
They have the home advantage.
This was the first ELM qualifier, and there are a lot to come. I think there is... already something in the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
like from the Bazaar of Boxes series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They have only just some slots left, so grab your tickets right there. We can put the link to the Twitter post in the show notes,
mm-hmm.
so be sure if you're out of that area to get your tickets. And we have already set our dates for the ELM qualifiers in Austria.
This is, of course, also exciting because we have... in Austria, also some slots where people can qualify and grind, let's say, one of those pressure slots. And we will have two of them in the 3-for-1 store that is hopefully famously known now by as one of the big sponsors of Brian Cowell.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, they sponsor him. So internationally speaking, this is also pretty known, well-known store and organization kind of. We'll have one in March. In 16th of March is the first qualifier in the 3-for-1 store in Vienna. The second one will be in May, the same year. So this date will be announced when we know if there are any pre-releases or not. So this has to be sorted out. But it will be any one of the Saturdays in May for the 3-for-1 qualifier. We have one in Graz, actually. So this is actually maybe interesting for the Italian peoples listening, because Graz is closer to Italy than Vienna or Upper Austria. So you can reach it if you want.
I think... correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's about 3 hours from
the Bologna era, maybe.
Udine, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty reachable. And Graz, we have also an ELM qualifier. It is in a shop called Trading Cards United, and it will be on the 27th of April this year. And then we have the big ones, of course, in our hometown, where the Austrian Legacy League is located, in Linz, in Upper Austria. We have two slots that we will give out in one weekend.
We will make the Alm again. The Austrian Legacy Masters happen again.
2.0.
Because we had such a great time last year that we want to do this again. And unfortunately... we're kind of bound by the location.
Still also limited in the slots, in the registration, or how many people can join.
Yeah, unfortunately. But we have, again, 3 tournaments for you with a warm-up Friday night for you. Then the Austrian Legacy Masters on Saturday. And basically our own Seasons End tournament on Sunday, where we also play out an ELM slot. So 2 slots for you at 1 weekend in Austria. It's basically something like a little GP.
This is very exciting. And this whole event will most likely, this is a big or small disclaimer, most likely will happen on the 26th of July up to the 28th of July. depends on if there is another pre-release event, then we might have to shift it to 1 week earlier. But as soon as we know that, we will of course post it on our social medias.
It's Austrian _ Legacy on Twitter, also yep. Austrian _ Legacy on Instagram.
We will post the link also in the show notes so that you can have a look at our dates and the qualifiers. We have posted them there also, so you can have a look and hopefully travel to some of these events.
See you in Linz.
Yeah, most likely see you in Linz, or most importantly.
Yeah, most importantly. Actually, we talked about Four Seasons earlier in the pre-show, so... we are trying to get to Four Seasons in March, mm-hmm. on the 8th to 10th of March.
Yep.
And actually for me, it's kind of unsure if I can go or not, because
hopefully
hopefully I can, because I have some work scheduled for exactly that weekend.
Yeah.
And I have to try to just switch some things up. But actually, if I can't attend Bologna, mm-hmm. then I try to attend 3-for-1 trading.
Yeah.
In Vienna.
Like in May or March?
In March. Weekend
after that.
So maybe we can see us there. Would be great.
Well, also would be great, yeah. Okay. So this is our ELM season for this year. And
yeah, that's what the ELM qualifying season looks like in 2024. Yes,
exactly. But of course, we have one topic now, Philip, that is also linked to all that, I think. As we discussed in with this event of Damnation happening, the Legacy meta game looks rather diverse and very well at the moment, and people really enjoy and appreciate the format. How will Legacy look like during the year, or when... The year continues and evolves. What do you think will happen in the next upcoming months?
Yeah, I try to get my fortune telling working, and I try to look into the
don't tell too much
magic glass ball that I have here. Yeah, and I channel my key.
Yeah,
no, but really, we know about the set releases, and it's like we have now Ravnica remastered on. But that just doesn't affect us. But what's great, there is Golgari Grave Troll and Golgari Fog.
It's strictly better upgrades for the cards.
Yes, finally. Old border.
That is true, yeah. Best border is old border.
That's true.
Yeah. Objectively. No, it's just a joke, of course.
And then we have Murder at Karlov Manor, which basically takes also place in Ravnica. There are some spoilers out there. Mm. They look kind of nice, but nothing really groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I think then there's the Fallout release.
This is like a special set, I guess.
I'm unsure. Is it like...
Is it like Warhammer, or...?
Maybe it's like Warhammer. Maybe it's like... Warhammer and Lord of the Rings, then they are Legacy legal, and maybe there's one or two gems in it, like we had in Warhammer, and also one or two gems, five or six gems in
let's call Lord them the gems.
Yeah. I think these cards maybe shake up Legacy a little bit, probably more than Murdered Karlov Manor.
Yeah, I think so too. This is like a standard set, right? This Murder at Karlov.
Yes, standard set.
And standard sets usually don't have cards like Bowmaster.
Cards like Bowmaster, but sometimes they have some kind of outliers in the power level, expressive iteration
the format, it makes a difference. Up the Beanstalk would also be
the same
card
player,
like this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is. We couldn't expect, but usually, let's say, the special sets have more power leveling cards, like what we saw in Lord of the Rings, for example.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there will be a little bit of injection at Murder of Karlov Manor, and also a little bit of injection at the Fallout set.
Yeah.
Basically. And after the Fallout set,
we have a rotation.
No, not really. That's just a Western set. It's Outlaws
for the next set after Fallout.
Yeah, that's a Western set.
Yeah, Okay, also this is not Fallout, you mean, but there's another set.
Yeah, after. you have Remastered, then Murder Fallout? Cult Manor, yeah. Fallout, then Trouble at Outlaw Trouble at some kind of junction. I don't know about the.
This is again a standard set, right?
Yeah, I think it's another standard set.
Yeah.
And what I really like about this is players were screaming for years for a Western themed set. And I'm curious, how they will implement shotguns, revolvers, pistols, lassos, and
riding horses or something like this. Well, has been done in the past, but still, like wild west style.
It will be interesting. I think it's a standard set, so put it on the same level as this House of at Carlof Manor.
Yeah.
I don't really think that the IP or the lore background really interferes here with the feeling of MTG. Like, people always have that fear, and I for myself had that fear also for a long time. But Kamigawa Neon Dynasty felt great.
Yeah.
For such a steampunky or maybe not a cyberpunk like set, it felt great and it felt had its place in the MTG lore. Therefore, I'm also not fearing the Western themed set here.
Oh, if it's only one time and if it's not taking over the whole Magic theme as a whole, and we still have this wizardry, dark, middle age kind of theme as a main one in the different planes that we have, I also don't think it's a problem. There's way worse than that. I don't know if you remember. I mean, it's a special set, but if you remember My Little Pony or something like this. I mean,
at least these cards are not tournament legal. We made a whole episode about this in the beginning. I think it was a third or fourth episode, where we talked about the Universes Beyond the Walking Dead cards. These are still a little bit too much for my liking, but I think they will get them right. That's one thing WotC can get right. At least it's something.
So far it has been fine.
Yeah, it's the lore. That's what they can get right. I hope they don't fuck it up, but yeah.
But they can potentially, and everybody expected that they fuck it up when Modern Horizon 3 will come out.
Oh, yeah. So basically, our beloved format, our favorite format, will rotate this summer.
Yeah. And I think it comes out in June. So expect the ELM of this year in September be totally different than we have a different format.
Totally. And I don't think we can say anything. There aren't spoilers yet, but I'm pretty sure there will be some kind of cycle that will be pretty mandatory to play.
Yeah, so, Endurance 2.0 or something like this.
Yeah, it would be. I will advise all of our listeners to put back $500,000 dollar, a bucks or euros. I don't care what currency you use.
Whatever you have.
Whatever you have. At least $500,000 for new cards in June. Because Wizards know, I don't want to say they know what they're doing, but they know how to get cash.
Yeah.
And this will happen again.
I have made for myself a nice little strategy, and it worked so far at this point.
Tell me your secrets.
I'm pretty bad at predicting what cards would be good or not, or when I look at the spoilers. But what I realized actually when talking to a good friend, Mark Eggfogt Pemmin, whenever I talk to him, he knows exactly what cards would be good, and it always is true. He predicted Up the Beanstalk is good. He predicted the One Ring is good. Also, he predicted the Orcish Bowmaster would be good. So I pre-ordered all of them at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And it was fine. It worked out. Because I cannot depict them in the context of format. I think it's so difficult when you just have the spoilers. You cannot imagine how these cards actually play out during a game of Magic. And when you're able to do so, you can really see, okay, ah, this card is really strong, or I don't know, this is useless. And because, yeah, just looking at the card doesn't tell you the answer to that.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I, for myself, I also totally misjudged these three cards.
I think we talked about Up the Beanstalk, and we were like, okay, yeah, it's 2 mana, draw a card, come on, and then you need like a 5 mana card, come on, can it be that good?
Yeah, and now it's like, it's so incredibly easy to just draw this one card more and just runs away with the game.
True, true. And yeah, no, the first one is maybe okay, but then when you have two, yeah, it's really gets out of hand, because then you can just dump everything into that and you live off the trigger and you refuel everything. It has been amazing.
Yeah, I have seen this, and I really like to bring this deck up here, the blue green one that I played, and it really had let me felt the power of four color of beanstalk, of up the beanstalk. And almost every card you play draws you a card after you drop the beanstalk.
Yep.
And this is just so insane. And you refuel all the time. And if you have two, it's game over for your
opponent. I can see it. I've been toying around with this Pokemoki pile. In the recent, I play tested it last week. A little bit. This is the bug version. And I felt, when I first looked at it, I felt, this does not look very powerful. If you look at this deck list, this, how can this beat any control deck that has access to swords or Leyland Binding or something like this? And then this is one example that plays out so differently than it looks at the beginning.
Okay.
Because actually, and I watched some of the videos that Pokemoki did. He did some playtesting against Brian Cowell, for example, against his 4 or 5 color control deck. And he won every single match of this game.
Okay, wow.
It seems that this deck is perfectly able to go under control decks while also being on the upper hand against Delva. And this is a very, very...
That's a rare circumstance.
Rare circumstance, and can be quite powerful if you use the weapon in the right direction. Because when always the problem of mid-range is, of course, yeah, you might be able to beat Delva because you can go bigger or have more removal or whatever, but you struggle against control because you...
are not that big.
Are not that big, exactly. But this version actually felt pretty... Maybe it's not favorable. I don't know. But, like, statistically, at least. But it has a pretty fair shot, and it's definitely in the range of 50-50. I don't know which is actually favored. I don't know. Depends on the version and the build, of course. But given in the context of the format, I think this is, in terms of mid-range deck, this is one of the better versions that... are able to be played at in this period of time, actually, in the last couple of years, probably. And this is very nice.
And what kind of removal does the deck play?
It has a suit of Fatal Pushes, Shield Reds, Edicts, and Murderous Cuts. So each of those are 2-offs in the deck, in the standard version. And then there is a pair of Widowblown Commands also.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do you battle a Resolve Catherine?
You can only cut it, or Murderous Cut deals with it, like, temporarily, or...
You have to board in Surgical Emerald, right?
You have a one-off Surgical in the sideboard also.
Okay. You have played this card?
You have a one-off Thoughtseize in the main deck. it feels really weird, because you have a lot of these one-offs in the main and in the sideboard, where you think, a one-off, how can this help me? And I think... For Catherine, this is a problem, I think, yeah? So, Catherine is... Here's where I'm not so sure if the deck can sustain against Catherine. But I think against Catherine, you just want to do Wasteland plus Murktide as a strategy. You don't want to tempo them out.
Okay, yeah, I can see this, yeah.
You don't want to cut it once. and then win before it can enter the battlefield again, something like this. Because if it stays, you lose.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So, that's what I thought about it.
Because
On paper, that if you don't have really the tools to discard it and surgical it, or to exile it with swords or with any kind of there are some kind of necromancy or some kind of effects where you search your opponent's library and then exile all of these cards. I don't see this deck on paper winning against 4 or 5 color Kefren.
Yeah. Kefren might be a problem. And I think in the video that I watched where Pokemogi played against Brian Cowell, Brian did play a version without Kefren.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more like this only Uro, I think. And I don't think... I'm not sure if there were even Bowmasters in the deck, but I think just Uros as a wincon, and then the rest is just normal control shell. And here, this bug Pokemon Cabal is pretty good.
Yeah, that's
pretty good.
That's reasoning I can really get behind, because I for myself think if you want to be a really, really good control deck, you have to play Triumph. And that's what my big grasp is with Modo right now, is there's still no Kefren on Modo.
Yeah, that is true.
And my prediction is for 2024 that we still haven't found the best Kefren shell.
Because maybe there might not even be availability to Kefren in this year, but this would be very sad if they wouldn't make it to MTGO this year.
Kefren. Yeah, it's just... it's almost... 2 years now.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Also, I think what is still pending is the official ruling, the gatherer ruling of Kefren as well, because this applies also to paper tournaments. Like when you destroy it and when it triggers, you are required to exile the first 6 cards.
Yeah.
And if you remove the Kefren in response, you still exile the 6 cards and you do not get them back. But this is not meant to be that way. And they announced, I think, on Twitter that they will change the rules, but it has not happened, I think, at this point.
Strange.
So this is also a little bit of discrepancy, because this is actually a relevant ruling. And I think one of the more famous people is Max Torschen, who wants to have this change because he wants to play Kefren in Doomsday. And of course, when you have Doomsday up and the piles set up, you don't want to have Kefren in there and you miracle it, and when it dies, you exile the whole deck. But if you don't exile it, then you can at least do Doomsday stuff with it also. So there's a lot of potential for this card, and I don't know why it takes so long. This is a really, really pity, because we see it has a big impact of the format.
Yeah, for sure, like we predicted. This is something, if we play with the cards, we can accurately say that they're good or not.
Yeah.
So we are not that dumb, actually.
Yeah. Pretty interesting, but yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Modern Horizons 3 will bring us to a new level, to a new common ground.
Yep.
And
I guess so.
We will play Modern Horizons 3 Legacy from there on. Actually, I won't buy any elementals like Solitude or Fury or something.
Let's hope that there will not be such thing, but you never know. I don't know what they will do.
Death Rite Shaman 2.0. For 0 2/2 with Death Rite Shaman abilities.
And with haste, of course.
And with haste and colorless.
Of course. Death. Yeah. Well, everybody should play.
No, it's blue.
It's blue, of course, yeah.
You can pitch it to force.
Yes.
Oh no. I'm pretty sure we now have given what see some ideas.
Modern Horizons 4. It's already in the planning.
But yeah, one thing again, like we already talked about this now with the Death Rite Shaman.
Yep.
Did you hear about the AI incident that the Wizards had?
Oh, right, yes. Now? Oh my God. This is so embarrassing, to be honest. Oh, yeah, true. I mean, how obviously can it be that when you post a picture and it was meant to be a showcasing of a new old border shock lens, two of them aren't actually shock lens, so they are just guild gates. So we have three shock lens randomly and then two guild gates. And then a lot of like artifacts of blur and everything that a normal artist would never do.
Yeah.
Everybody knows, okay, this is an AI picture. And then they just claim, no, this is human made. We stand by that.
Yeah, just double down on
it. Double down on it. I think this is even more because this does not convince anybody. This just fools, calls everybody stupid, kind of.
Yeah.
And this is, I don't know, this is so obvious that, I mean, for other cases, you can argue, okay, yeah, did they do that or not? You don't know all the information, but this is like pretty clear.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you think, but for me, if they would just post a picture, hey, we fired up some AI and we wanted to showcase our nice cards and this is what it looks like.
Then it's fine.
It's fine. Why yeah. do you have to? I mean, it's just, okay, we can just post. Okay, we wanted to try it out and yeah, it looks like this and yeah.
I also simply don't get it why they can't be transparent. I simply can't get it.
Man, this is just stupid.
Yeah, it's just stupid. It's just a dumb PR disaster, basically. So that's something. My prediction for 2024 is that we will see a lot more of these PR disasters from WotC.
Okay.
Yeah, because they fired 1,100 people. But not WotC, but Hasbro. There are a lot of WotC employees as well.
Yeah.
I can say I get it. If you slim down a company, then only the best ones should be there because a chain can only be so good than its weakest link. I get all that, but really, is that now your best?
Yeah. This is not needed. I think this is easily to be avoided and that doesn't hurt anybody. And
just one graphic designer or one employee.
Yeah.
That was kind of familiar with AI. That's like in our generation, 20 to 30 or something like that.
Yeah.
Takes one look at this picture and knows, hey, this thing is from AI. We can't post it like that.
Yeah. I mean, come on. The most obvious thing is like, this is not all shock lens. I mean,
yeah.
What's going on? what do you want to showcase here?
Guild gates.
Guild gates, yeah. Random guild gates. Nice. But you know what gives me a little bit of hope also? Is one thing that was happening on the blogger talk from Maro.
Oh yeah, I've read this. Tell us. Yeah, tell us.
It has been complained or let's say brought up in as a comment or question. What's going on with Wizards with this high frequency of sets being printed, and we really see this special set after promo product after normal set. It feels like every month we have a pre-release kind of.
Yeah.
And this is getting out of hand and people, and for myself, I mean, I'm following it a little bit. I cannot follow anymore which product is going up one and is it now a standard legal product? Yeah. Is it now a special product? Only a commander product? And it's going everywhere.
Yeah, the problem is if even we as content creators can't really get a grasp about all of this releases, then it's just too much.
It's too much.
We can't talk about the new cards. Yep. We can't talk about spoilers or something because it's nothing exciting.
No,
it's like there's a saying: if everything is special, nothing is.
Exactly.
And that's what it feels like. Everything is just the same. Not that it's the same, but it's just too much. And it's the same with foils.
Yeah.
Foils used to be rare, special. Yeah. Yeah. And now if you want to pimp your deck, you sign it. Because that's the most way likely, pimping goes now.
Because basically any card, I think when was the last set or time that there was only one new version of a card that only had this one version. I think every card has now an alternate art, full art version, promo version, full foil version, whatever. I don't know, or this kind of comic arts or whatever, different styles, what are there? It doesn't feel special anymore to any cards. So much going on and being just printed. But the good thing is that it was raised on the blogger talk, and Maro did acknowledge it and said, yes, if you complain, basically it helps, and it has been recognized by the team, and it could be, well, at least when he says it publicly, maybe they will implement this idea and slow it a little bit down.
And yeah, so just complain away about the releases, about Modern Horizons 3, about the power level. Just complain. Not just only vote with your wallet, because that can have some implications that you maybe don't want to have.
Sure.
And that was always such kind of a thin line, actually, to walk across. Because if you always vote with your wallet, then maybe they... don't support the game that we really love actually anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's good for us to know from someone on the mothership that simply complaining on social media about these kind of things actually really does something without putting all these negative sides to that case.
I agree. I think this is a good statement. So keep your make your comments and give feedback. This is important. And
while we are at it, just give feedback to us what you like and what you don't like about our podcast. Because actually, this is a kind of how do you say this? This is a kind of a hard project for us, and we really want to get in touch with a lot of people and bring the message out there.
This is our third year, I think. Did we do this podcast, right?
I'm pretty sure it's the third year.
Yeah.
And so we're on a 3-week schedule, so episode 64 now, and some kind of bonus episodes here and there.
Yeah.
If you want to support this cast, not monetarily, but if you want to support us really or greatly, just tell your friends.
Yeah, spread the word.
Like us on social media.
Share us.
That's really what helps us grow. And that's why we are doing this, just for the love of the game. Because I think we're sitting all in the same boat.
Yeah.
And we're here for, how Sahim Hardy likes to say, we're here to sling wizard squares.
Absolutely. And Philip, I think this wraps up the episode also pretty nicely. This segue into the socials and the motivation behind all this. So, yeah, I think if you like what we are doing, then as Philip also said, follow us on social media at inresponse_legacy. Everywhere, basically.
Normally that's my part, so it's a little bit hard for you.
And for myself, you can find me on Twitter. It is at Flying Delvar. Mostly talking about Legacy most of the time, of course. Philip, we can find you.
But at first, you can find Peter, who's not here today, on Twitter. He's at Unicorn Lord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. I wanted to say this for so long. And you can find me, as always, on Twitter. It's at FinnekMTG, PHINEKMTG. And as always... in response. Yeah.
This was In Response, a Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.